that have been?
Yeah, exactly. That's right.
If you think about it.
Plus, we still have this, though.
Right? Yeah, we still have this no matter what. No matter how we set it up. This year, it'll always be that. That's right. Yeah.
You know, you're moving through. When you're using water in the system, it's just flowing through.
Yeah, I have money in my water. It's like water. It should be like sodium carbonate.
Yeah, and he was saying you have this mixing valve, too.
Are you helping us out there?
Yeah, man. Well,
no, because it didn't fall.
Oh, okay.
It's well, like hopefully they only run a little bit through.
Yeah, that's great.
It's probably enough to close to 100 before I finish.
Oh, so it's not empty. It's with oil. You just don't run anything through. Isn't that right? It's just...
You don't run the pump.
Troubleshoot the controller. I'm going to set this.
Too high switch.
Just say it. Yeah, so let's talk about a controller.
It's too cool your tank. If it's too high... It would make it too hot, I guess.
That makes sense. So just nothing
nothing to the panels because they drain back into this thing. Yeah, that makes sense. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Okay, that one's going to have to be pulled out and mess up a little bit.
Or let's go get Vic some money for pizza. Do you want to have some pizza for lunch?
Some good stuff.
No. 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 Was set on Chick-fil-A. I told him we're having junk food for lunch in this world. Chick-fil-A. And I'll be glad to take money up for
I'm sure I can get some.
Yeah, he had said $5 a piece, I think is what he said.
Hey, thanks.
So, all right. So,
I feel like it's cross-threaded, but it's got this little discussion. It's just a hair off.
Maria.
I'm Charles. I live before Trenton and Arrington right here.
Oh, cool. Right here in the...
That makes all this stuff work. It's interesting.
Came down, I think.
Yeah, it's down here.
There it is.
I was looking to see if we had any more of the lead alignment.
This is probably one of the things that makes all this a lot easier is that these kind of electronics are reliable and cheap now.
Yeah, yeah, and it's really straightforward. But slide this over. If you just hold that top piece, I'm going to bring another foot over here. 1, 2, 3. Let's see if that's good enough. Let's see. Maybe that's enough already.
I'm not really helping.
I want to get it where we can see it. Yeah, let's get just a hair closer. If we just slide it in, exactly. That's only a drop off. Okay. So. Dehumidifier.
It's a quieter anyway.
Okay, so this is live electrical circuit, so. Somebody's at
me.
Please don't lick it. Okay, so. Let's unplug it. Let's look first. Okay, they all come over here in the light. Okay, so we have basically these thermistors. Mm-hmm. And these guys, as they get hotter, their resistance drops.
Okay.
So it's an inverse relationship, as they call it. So if they're really hot, the resistance drops really low. And all this controller really does, I'm going to grab another sheet of paper over here, is compare the two, basically. It says, is it hot on the roof and cold in the tank? And if so, I'm going to do something. Okay? So if I look at a temperature versus resistance chart, I see that... If this sensor hits 0 degrees Fahrenheit, it's 85,000 ohms. Mm-hmm. And if it hits 300 degrees, it's 190 ohms. So they swing rather rapidly both directions, and it's a pretty wide range. And so all the controller really does is say, compare these two guys. And when two things are met, you have two basic control items. You have a high limit for the tank, which is the point where you say, my tank sensor hits somewhere between 100, 105, and 200 degrees Fahrenheit. We set that number and we say, cut off, have everything drained back into the system, quit heating the tank. Yeah. You don't want to boil the tank.
Yeah.
So we normally would set that at 150 on the bottom, which puts the top at 160 or so, roughly 165, 140, 150. Depends on what the homeowner really wants and a couple other sort of minor variables on the system. We would tend to run a single tank system, maybe a little bit warmer than a two tank system, sometimes two. It just depends on what the homeowner says. Then there's also this turn on potentiometer, which is only saying, what's the difference between the tank and the collectors that you want me to turn the pumps on or turn the circuit on? It's not necessarily pumps, it could be anything. And so we tend to set that somewhere between 16 and 24 degrees. If I set it down at 8 degrees, what will happen is the unit's sitting here. The unit's sitting here and all the fluids in the reservoir. It says, oh, wow, the collectors are 8 degrees hotter than the tank. Send the fluid up through the collectors and gather the heat. Well, it sends the fluid up through the collectors, and it immediately cools them down 8 degrees. And then it says, well, it's not 8 degrees anymore. Now cut off. And so it goes and click. It runs for 3 minutes. Click. It cuts off. There's some internal algorithms preventing it from going click, 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 click. But in the end, you're normally 16 to 24 degrees allows it to come on, run for a period of time that's going to gather some real heat, and then cut back off. So let's do it. Let's take a look at this guy. And we will do that by... We're going to do that by using a torch to heat it up, and we're just going to leave it right here. I'm trying to think of a place where we can all sort of see what's going to happen here, and I'm not coming up with any great ideas yet. We're going to just set it on the ground where we can look at it, because that's the safest place, and then otherwise we'll get shocked unless we dunk it in a bucket of water. We're just going to set it on the ground. Okay, so now what I'm going to do is each of those thermistors is set up. One of them is set up on what says tank, and one of them is set up on what says solar. All right, and so the solar one is the lower one. So this is the tank sensor, and this is the collector sensor. So we're going to simulate a nice hot day on the roof by turning on the torch, and it's going to head a little bit elsewhere, which would be all right. Turn our torch on. So I'm going to heat this guy up. You'll see the second red light will come on. Click. Right there. All right. So the one red light means I'm plugged in. The second red light means I'm activating the circuit to run the pumps. Now, if we give it just a minute, it's going to cool back down pretty quickly. The thermistors actually react rather quickly, and it'll cut it back off.
Do you ever have these relays fail, or these are pretty reliable?
Pretty straightforward, yeah. So we turn it up to 24 degrees, so it'll come off quicker. Now, here's another thing. So now I'm going to simulate the tank getting really hot, and it'll cut it off then because it says, okay, I hit my high limit. So I cut it off then because, like I said, the tank's hot as fire. Yeah. So the secondary part of the logic kicks in. When they're greater than a certain temperature and the tank is below the high limit set point. Mm-hmm. So either way, it's going to activate it. They're really easy to troubleshoot. You put an ohm meter on them. You can look at the resistance. It's simple, straightforward stuff. It's a plug-in. So we'll take the pumps before we're done, and we'll attach them with a drop cord with an end cut drop cord. We'll put both of these pumps on that, and we'll plug that into the controller.
Yep.
So, cool. Yeah, it's straightforward. It's all internal, easy logic stuff. It's all 25-year-old. It's sort of bulletproof.
Does the third light indicates I've gone past my?
The third light is a freeze protection light that's not used in the functionality that we have.
Okay.
Lord, we wish we could get rid of it because everyone says, "What's the third light
for?"
Yeah, exactly. It would be nice to get rid of it.
Tape over,
yeah, exactly. Or just cut. I don't know if I could just cut the LED out. What would happen? I've never actually done that, but yeah, the third light doesn't offer any functionality for us. So now it also has another dip switch internally that can do, you can turn it on automatically by hand, off or auto. So it has an on off auto for troubleshooting, so I can see if my pumps work right. Yep. So, yeah. So, I mean, that's, and what role, what works is basically, I mean, what actually, the moving parts is that, this, and this. And so these guys are pretty straightforward. We can take one of these apart, and I'll show you how this works, too. We're going to have to take it apart anyway to solder this one. So let me see. I think this is the same as that, I believe.
Can I back up and ask a general question?
Yeah, yeah, please. Of course.
I didn't quite understand why there's two different
elements.
Yeah.
Okay. So the tank is set up with the ability to heat the whole tank. But it has the two elements never work at the same time, so they're staged. So it always heats the top half of the tank first, and then it heats the bottom half of the tank after the top half is satisfied.
Mm-hmm. And the top's like, I guess, you know, you're getting close to running out of hot water, so I'm going to hit it, blast the top.
Yep. In general, I would say, okay, what would normally happen, you start using a shower, cold water starts coming into the bottom of your tank, you're taking the hot water off the top, so the cold water, so it's filled with hot water all the way to the bottom when it starts, a standard electric water heater. It starts to run hot water out, the cold water starts to fill from the bottom, it goes up and up and up and up and up and up and up, and then it says, oh, start, click on. And then it keeps rising, 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 and then you stop taking a shower. Okay, then that one fulfills it, it gets hot, 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 boom. Then it turns off. Otherwise, it goes up, 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 you keep using it, you stop, the next shower comes, you go to the second shower, it's up here, third shower, it's up here, boom. Then this one kicks on and turns that one off. And then this one fills it up, so it fills the hot at the top of the tank first, boom, heats it up. And then this one turns off when it satisfies that thermostat, and then it goes to the bottom half and heats up the second half.
Well, why couldn't you just do that with one at the bottom?
because you would dilute how quickly it would take it a lot longer to recover because it would stir the whole tank.
No, this is so that you can have that second shower sooner.
Yeah, exactly. That's correct. Yeah, you got it. Exactly.
Yeah, that hot water would drive up through the coal. You know, the coal
would, it would tumble. Process, yeah, tumble. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So,
you want it stratified. Yeah, exactly. That's very important.
So is this a specialized water heater for this application?
No. Or, this is
that one doesn't have this, right?
That is a gas water heater versus an electric. That's right. Yep. So that gas water heater has a burner in the bottom that lights up and burns it. The flame is right there. We can turn it on and see. And we'll do that real quick. Let's do it. We'll show you how it got. Yeah, we get this out of stuff.
So there's not the equivalent of that one for this two-stage.
This has a thermostat right here, and that's this little coupling that goes inside of the tank. So we're going to actually turn this up, and you'll see the blue flame at the bottom.
You'll hear it.
Yeah. So it heats up, and you look, there's a big blue flame. In the bottom of this, there's like a fire with the natural gas burning. The flue is where the heat's coming out. You know, the pipe will get hot rather quickly. It's heating up the water now, and it will cut off when the thermostat setting that I just changed to a higher limit meets it. Now, the reason that this tank has a higher loss, a standing loss, is because this hole you see right here in the middle goes all the way down to the bottom where the flame is. So that big hole in the center of this tank, all night long, energy is lost.
Plus the heating up the house in the summertime.
Yeah, plus it heats up your house in the summertime. That's right. You got it.
How does it heat the water heater? Does it heat it with the hot air?
The hot air goes up in the center of the water heater and heats it through the jacket wall of the tank.
Okay.
Yep, that's right. Yep.
Well, that's like an upside down funnel.
But that, how much of an angle on it? Okay. For the line.
So yeah, that's a little iffy. Not too bad though. So a gas water heater inherently is less efficient than an electric from a standpoint of like what's my standing losses. Now, most people don't care about efficiency. They care about how much my power bill is, how much it will cost me to heat my water. So gas costs less per BTU, it gets good and hot, than electric currently.
Yeah.
How quickly that'll change is, you know, people buy futures on both of those all day long every day. So what we hear and what we believe to be a reasonable estimate is somewhere between 5 and 10% every year for the next 10 years. Now, last year it ended up going something like 30-some-odd percent in the end. It went up 50, 60% to start, and then it dropped back down more, even doubled, and then dropped back down quite a bit. But we believe that it's likely that we'll end up with somewhere around, you know, 10% a year every year for the next 10 years. So when people look at investments for their money, if someone will give you 10% a year every year, your money doubles in price every seven years or so when you count the inflation. So 7 years from now, your gas bill should double. Is a good rule of thumb we tell people. If the predictions for gas prices are relatively close to correct. Now, who knows what will happen between now and then?
It's a tough call.
Yeah, if the price of electricity hasn't gone up in North Carolina in 20-some-odd years, effectively, not much, if any. So the Utilities Commission has got a really good isolation between us and rising prices. Now, it's a double-edged sword. It keeps the payback for solar much longer and makes it less interesting for a consumer like yourself. If your price of electricity had doubled, I could tell you save $75 a month versus $38 a month. You're like, God, that's great. $75 a month, that's a lot of money. And the cost of it might not go up much to do the system itself. But in reality, low prices of fuel are, you know, it's both sides of the equation, basically. The price of fuel and the cost of the system both interplay into how long it takes to pay it back. And the price of systems have gone up in the last 6 months. The price of copper has doubled almost. So most of what we use is copper. And our price of everything we buy for our living has gone up in major ways. So it's about $400 or $500 extra we've soaked into a system. Yeah. In addition to the liability insurance for going on roofs and plumbing and electricity is... You're in the kind of, we're almost arc welders for a living, but not quite. We're real close. So to do it right and be insured properly like we are and have all the proper insurance and to train the guys right and get quality people to go up and can do all these things and not hurt themselves is relatively challenging. So it's a niche market in some ways, which we like. But on the other side of things, you know, we also want to see solar succeed long-term in North Carolina in a mass market way. So this is a basic electrical pump. Circulation pump is what both of these are. They look almost the same when you take them apart. I won't take that one apart. I need to take this one apart to solder it. I got to take this little O-ring out of it so that I can solder copper on both sides of it. But basically, this pump has an inlet and an outlet on what this is called the volute, which is a fancy name for the where the water comes in and out. The water comes in this side and into the center through this little top hole. And then the pump spins and pushes it out the side, which is the side hole. So it also has an arrow for those of us that look at it and wonder which way it's pumping.
That's what they call a centrifugal pump.
Yeah, it's a centrifugal. Yeah, exactly. A centrifugal pump, exactly. And so this guy spins, and it has a little fan in there, basically, that pushes the water out. So these are actually relatively inexpensive pumps, $130 for the parts to replace one, basically. Not a lot of money. A little bit less than that, because usually what goes wrong is this, the cartridge. This is usually what goes bad with the pump. The rest of it is mechanical windings and the magnetics and all the other things that go into a pump. But this is usually what goes wrong, which is called the cartridge. And so to replace a cartridge is like $45 an hour of a guy's time, you know, $110, $120 total. They're really easy to troubleshoot. They either run or they don't. You can pretty much feel them. They're meant to run in hot environments, meant to run with hotter temperatures than we are. They're industrial-style pumps. They're made for solar, basically, in effect. They don't say this isn't a solar pump, but it's applicable to solar because of its specifications. So, Tenco is the brand that we use a majority of the time and is somewhat the established brand in the world of pumps, although we found some other pump manufacturers recently that have come with some pretty competitively priced pumps that the engineering appears to be just a little bit more bulletproof than this. We're hesitant to move because 20 years, this is what everyone has.
Sure.
So we're hesitant to leave that sort of scenario for a lot of reasons. Even if it is a little bit better pump, there's a lot of efficiencies with keeping with the same pumps and being able to have
the same cartridge out every time.
You got it. Yeah, and you know you got the right parts, and you know they're going to get the same thing, and you know what they're going to last. But we've seen them last 18, 20 years when they're inside a closet in a garage. We've seen them last 4 years in a crawl space that's real humid, which would be pretty close to what we're sitting in right now. It's really also the other thing about pumps is that if you install the system wrong and the pumps are under a lot higher stress than they could be, then you're going to reduce the life of the pump significantly. So the installation is really important. And how they're installed and how they end up sitting when they're installed and where you're installing them and how they're pumping influences their life more than anything else.
You short cycle them, I guess.
You short cycle them, exactly right. Yep, you short cycle them, you want them to run. So what would a traditional solar system do on a house when it's sunny out there? So say Vic has run all the hot water out of this tank, it's cold, and it gets sunny this morning, and it's sunny all day long. In a sun where the sun doesn't have that big tree back there, the system would start in the morning and in general run pretty much all day long. It wouldn't go off and on all night. It would generally run all day long in a good sighted system. So it would tend to run pretty much of the day. Not all day, but in general, most of the day. And when it gets to the high limit of the tank, it may kick off and on. But if those panels are getting heat on them, they get hot fast.
So running all day long means that the fluid just continually cycling around, heating that water, sending it here.
And we have bigger heat exchangers for bigger systems that are going to take more heat into this. So there's a ratio between storage, heat exchanger capacity, and production on a roof that all interrelate in a system that you have to get it right. Which aren't real complex, but if you get them wrong, they have systems where pumps fail and short cycle and insulation melts off, and you have all types of other problems. They boil.
Are the panels in series or parallel?
The panels are in parallel, not in series.
Yeah.
There's an efficiency by putting them in parallel. You put them, the water goes across the whole manifold, across all four, and then up through all four of them, and then across the top manifold and down. Yeah. If you put them in series, like if you put water all the way through one, up and out, and then through another, and then up and out, the temperature of the last panel would be much hotter, and then the efficiency of the panel would drop because it's based on the temperature of the incoming.
Its ability to boost it is pretty low.
You got it, exactly.
If the shadows change, you can actually cool it.
You got it, exactly. And so we had some questions earlier about space heating. So one of the things about space heating is that if you have radiant floors with tubing in them, you might have water running through there at 85, 90, 100 degrees maybe. Solar is great at taking water from 60 to 110. Mm-hmm. It does it all day long great, even in the middle of the winter. To go from 110 to 180 is really tough, because it doesn't hit that hot on a roof on a windy winter day, even though it's in a box and it's got glass on front of it, but it's still losing heat to the outside. So solar and space heating, in general, are difficult proposals to really have financial rewards with.
Because space heater,
you need about 140. You got to have about 140 temperature water. Mm-hmm. So that's why you'll see an Apollo system, which is a gas water heater hooked up to a coil inside a space heater. In the wintertime, they got to turn that temperature up in their water heater 10, 15 degrees. Up to the 150, 160 mark to really get it efficient. So a gas water heater is great at that, but a solar is not. So it's great for lower temperature applications, basically, is what.
Too bad you're just using passive solar anyway.
Yeah, in general. Yeah. I mean, now we do them. We set them up like that all the time. Well, not all the time. We discourage people from doing that because your money is better spent someplace else. We talk more people out of that. People come to us, I want 10 panels on my roof. It's like, okay, we can do that, but God, you'd be better at buying a 19-SEER heat pump. Mm-hmm. And we don't make any money selling 19-SEER heat pumps, but in the end, it's really financially what's best for the customer. You can usually convince them to buy a water heater because the economics are really good for that. So.
But evacuated tubes could get that.
Evacuated tubes raise that up some, for sure. Yep, that's right. Not as much as they'd like to lead us to believe, it doesn't appear. Our experience so far has been that they're good, but not as great as they want you to think they are. Now, in China, that's all that's put on any roof, evacuated tubes. But here it doesn't appear that that's the case. And the evacuated tubes, the real issue that I have personally with them is that I can buy that piece of glass on that roof when a tree branch hits it. I can buy one of those next week from the solar suppliers. 4x6 panels, a common size panel. They kept the size of the panels the same for 40 years. They make the exact same panel. They're all buying the same aluminum extrusions that makes the box. And they all put them together different ways somewhat. But in the end, the glass size is the same. But that panel from China in 15 years, which is the mean life of the tube, who knows if we'll be buying tubes from Beijing. It seems unlikely that that'll be the last generation solar tube. It seems more likely that they'll improve it and change the size, is my sort of just guess. Now, it's already paid for itself probably twice, so you could make the argument that, well, it's already paid for itself twice, so you're just going to throw it away, but if I've just blessed one tube with a branch, I don't want to throw it away. I want to replace the tube because the rest of it's still good for another 30 years, in theory. But and then they're evacuated, so it's a vacuum inside that tube, and a vacuum inside a tube on top of a roof in the heat is always wanting to equalize. Whereas a panel is just a panel sitting up on a roof. There's no real life. It's never going to wear out unless you wear the copper out from the inside.
I'm sending the technology to evacuate the tube.
It's a tube with a absorber, which is the part that gathers the heat inside a glass. It's a piece of glass about this big a diameter, and it looks like a big fluorescent bulb, basically. And that tube then is evacuated. They take all the air out of that tube, so there's no air inside it. So it has basically no way for the heat to be lost out of it. So every bit of the heat that comes into that tube goes into that absorber and goes into the tube itself. Has a little thin fin in the middle, similar to the risers you saw on those pipes, the thin pipes. And at the top of that, there's a bulb that is, it's all encapsulated in its own system. It's clipped off and soldered shut. And so you put an evacuated tube in the sunlight and you hold the bulb, and the bulb gets hot in about a minute. It'll be boiled. It's like a 200 some odd degrees. A little tiny bit of water and antifreeze inside that thing, and it boils in a couple minutes in full sunlight, a minute or two. It'll boil the water inside, and that bulb gets really hot. Now, all those bulbs go into a manifold on the roof, and they all stick individually into a manifold. They slip into a manifold where the water goes across them, basically. And so it heats up much faster, and it also does better in cloudy performance, in theory. They're really good for space heating in Vermont because it doesn't lose any heat. So you see applications in the Northeast where they're great for space heating. And in Vermont, the equation changes because you're space heating 8 months of the year and cooling none. So in North Carolina, we're fundamentally at a disadvantage. Same way in Florida, you never see a space heating system.
Evacuated tubes are mainly used for space heating and cold climates.
It seems to be the best application. Yeah, that's the best application from a cost benefit ratio. Some people like the way they look; they're just cool. They look high tech.
You know, we've put up maybe a half dozen of them versus, you know, 60 in the last year of these. And in the end, it doesn't. This all stays the same. This all stays the same. It's just when the pipes go up to the roof, something different. He's getting the heat down here, and it doesn't fundamentally change our equation. You use 16 tubes to an 80-gallon tank, and we don't see a big difference in the heat output of them. They are advantageous where you have a roof that's pure east-west, that the tubes themselves are big glass with a flat absorber in them, and I can take it on the roof and I can tip it south, you know, 40 degrees. So I can make an east-facing roof almost south-facing. And that will increase your efficiency pretty good. So we will commonly recommend them in that application. But there's not that many roofs that are east-west, so the equivalent would be to add a third panel. And the cost for a 16-tube evacuated tube system is, you know, it's about $300 more to go for just a third panel. Because there's a $400 or $500 upcharge for the tubes. It costs that much more. I mean, we've... The evacuated tube guy sure wish we would sell more of them. But in the end, we also... Buying an American makes a difference. I mean, we bought Israeli collectors for about a month. And the quality wasn't as high, and that was a heck of a deal. Boy, they were cheaper. They were a lot less expensive, I should say. But we kind of looked around and finally said, you know, it's not worth it. We saved the customer $400 on the system, but that's not really influential. By the time the tax credits take that off, it's only really $200. And is $200 worth buying a collector from a foreign country that, as a company, we value? As a company, Southern Energy Management has also a sort of an ulterior set of values also from the standpoint of we tend to be like-minded, number one, and dedicated to renewable energy because we don't pay people as well as some other companies could and to start out, although we do offer profit sharing and other sort of motivations in that manner. But also, it's like we try to do other things that are more sort of globally impacted. You know, we buy all of our power for our business through NC Green Power. It costs us more money. It's not that expensive, but it's worth doing. We offer our employees, you know, we're going to start a plan of offering them alternative medicine as a benefit, you know, things like that. And then when we looked around and you have a political discussion over a beer after work on Friday, and it's like, well, you know, Israel's probably not on the top of our list of countries to support, right or wrong, politically, you believe it or not, but it did influence our decision some. One of our chief guys, actually, his family's from Palestine. So he was rather vocal about some of the more esoteric views. At any rate, it's a foreign collector. We buy our collectors from the collectors out of Florida, and they're also the most efficient. They're more efficient than the ones that are coming out of Israel, too. But we try not to be too political in our views. And we're also seeing a big resurgence now in conservative, traditionally Republican churches taking up a view that, hey, this environmental problem is everybody's problem, and that, you know, the reality of what we've been fed isn't the reality of what we believe. And so there's been actually a big resurgence, an interesting, like, for the 20 years I've been in this industry, this is like, never seen it coming, never thought I'd be able to go to a Baptist church and get, you know, people saying, oh my gosh, unbelievable. But we've done it on a number of occasions, and I'm a believer now that it's becoming less of a sort of a you know, environmentally minded Sierra Club style person, democratically generally type of an issue, which has been for 20 years kind of what it is and where my background is. But now it's become an issue with everybody, which is really intriguing and exciting, because when we get the other side that picks this up and says, our leadership's been feeding us a lot of crap, basically, then it's really, then things are going to start moving. So, and that's happening right now. It's interesting. Kind of fun, actually, for me personally. But not to inject a lot of political, we try not to inject a lot of political sort of views into our work, but it is sort of charged with that somewhat. So, I'm betting they're going to have pizza here soon, and we can clean some copper pipes, and we can kind of swap and see what they're doing up on that roof area. It's 1:30 now, so you guys only have a half an hour, and you might have some questions about the collectors on the roof.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, let's see where they are and kind of swap, and we've kind of seen a majority of all the moving parts and what kind of happens here. And although Vic's going to be like, dang, I didn't do anything. That'll be all right.
I appreciate all your commentary.
Yeah, man. This is great. This is what I'm passionate about what we do. So. Yeah.